Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you today at PSP Investments' annual public meeting. My name is Martin Glynn. I'm from Vancouver, and I'm the Chair of the Board of PSP Investments. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. C'est un plaisir d'être avec vous aujourd'hui. I would like to start by expressing my gratitude to the Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation, on whose traditional, unceded, and ancestral territories I am today. As this meeting is being transmitted virtually across Canada, I encourage you to reflect on the Indigenous territories from where you are participating. Please join me in reflecting on the history that brought us to this land and on the importance of reconciliation. I'm fortunate to be presenting to you today, accompanied by Deborah Arida, our new president and CEO. Also present today are Jean-François Bureau, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial and Risk Officer, Patrick Samson, Senior Vice President and Global Head of Real Assets Investments, and Edward Van Gelderen, Senior Vice President and Chief Investment Officer, and finally, Dillery Fernando, Managing Director and Head of Communications and Corporate Citizenship. The annual public meeting is our opportunity to share the results of PSP's investment 2022 fiscal year highlights. That is the period that runs from April 1, 2021 to March 31, 2022. And an opportunity for you, our stakeholders, interested parties, and members of the public to ask us questions. The question and answer session will take place at the end of our presentations. You can start to submit your questions using the chat function starting now so that we can start our Q&A promptly after the presentation. Let me start by reminding all of us of PSP's mandate. PSP's mandate is to manage the amounts transferred to it by the Government of Canada for the funding of retirement benefits earned from April 1, 2000 by members of the Federal Public Service, Canadian Forces, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and since March 1, 2007, the Reserve Force. PSP manages amounts transferred to it in the best interest of contributors and beneficiaries and invest assets with a view to achieving a maximum rate of return without undue risk of loss, having regard to the funding, policies, and requirements of the pension plans and the ability of those plans to meet their financial obligations. We are proud to serve the people who have dedicated their careers to serving our country. This is a privilege that we hold dear. Our legislative governance framework is established by the Public Sector Pension Investment Board Act. The Government of Canada is responsible for the funding policy, determining and communicating the tolerance for pension funding risk, appointing 11 non-executive directors, as well as members of the nominating committee who recommend new board members, and tabling PSP's annual report in Parliament. PSP has an arm's length relationship with the Government of Canada. This means that PSP is solely responsible for making investment decisions with no direction from the government. PSP is guided by the Board of Directors, of which I am the chair. PSP's directors are all appointed based on their professional expertise and experience and their capacity to guide the organization. By design, none of the members of PSP's boards are executive management employees of PSP. This ensures that board members bring an independent perspective to the matters under consideration. The Board of Directors is responsible for providing strong oversight and guidance to PSP to ensure the organization successfully manages growth and continues to meet its mandate. The Board of Directors is involved in determining the organization's strategic direction and is responsible for oversight and risk management. The Board is also responsible for the selection, performance evaluation, and compensation of the President and CEO, who reports to the Board of Directors. In carrying out its duties, the Board meets at least six times a year to review PSP's activities and strategy. The Board's committees meet quarterly or even more frequently. PSP's board members, whose pictures you see on the screen, have devoted considerable time and energy to the long-term success of PSP. Board succession planning was a key topic in fiscal 2022. We are grateful to outgoing board members, Garnet Garvin, William McKinnon and Timothy Hodson for their service and counsel. PSP has been fortunate to have benefited from their commitment and guidance. Board candidates are selected from a list of qualified Canadian residents proposed by an external nominating committee established by the President of the Treasury Board. Board members are appointed by the Governor and Council on the recommendation of the President of the Treasury Board. Over the last fiscal year, I was pleased to welcome three new directors to PSP's board: Gregory Crispin, Helen Malovey-Hicks, and Morris Tulloch. I'm also pleased to let you know that Miranda C. Hubbs has been reappointed for a four-year term. Lastly, I'm delighted that I've been reappointed as chair for another two-year term. I'm also pleased to let you know that the PSP board is comprised of six women and four men. And all four of the board's standing committees are also chaired by women in the current fiscal year. We have one vacant board position that will be filled in due course. Let me share key highlights of the board's work during fiscal 2022. First, there was the ongoing challenge of the pandemic. I am proud of the team spirit, diligence, and resilience demonstrated by PSP throughout the COVID-19 crisis. Senior management did a superb job steering the organization and its employees through some very unsettling times, all the while seizing opportunities to advance PSP's business interests. Secondly, fiscal 22 was also the inaugural year of PSP's new business strategy, PSP Forward. The board has been actively involved in developing the strategy. Fiscal 2022 gave us the opportunity to monitor its implementation and evaluate its initial impact. Thirdly, another priority for the board is the whole economy transition required by climate change and the challenges and opportunities it poses for PSP. In response, PSP released its first climate strategy in April 2022. We will have the opportunity to learn more about this strategy in just a few minutes from our new president and CEO, Deborah Arida, who is here with me today. Following a thorough and rigorous global search, we welcome Deborah to the organization on September 1, 2022. Deborah brings a depth and breadth of experience in the investment and finance industry, in real assets, private equity, capital markets, and investment banking. Deborah also brings a global perspective from leading teams in Toronto, New York, London, and Hong Kong. She was most recently Senior Managing Director, Global Head of Real Assets, and Chief Sustainability Officer at the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board. An inspired and transformational leader, Deborah is well placed to lead PSP in its next level of growth. I can speak on behalf of the entire board in saying that we all look forward to working with Deborah in her new role at PSP. And I would also like to thank Neil Cunningham for his vast and lasting contribution. He has helped mold PSP into the solid, strategic, and successful organization it is today. As part of his planned transition, and as of September 1, 2022, Neil became Vice Chair and Special Advisor to the President and CEO, and will support the transition process until his retirement, effective March 31, 2023. Merci beaucoup, and Deborah, over to you.
Thank you, Martin. Hello, everyone. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Nous sommes heureux d'être à Ottawa. Merci d'être avec nous aujourd'hui. Before I begin my presentation, I would like to acknowledge the impact of Hurricane Fiona in eastern Canada. It's heartbreaking to see the devastation, especially the loss of lives caused by this natural disaster. Our thoughts are with those affected, and we extend our gratitude to the first respondents and military. I'm deeply honored to be joining you today as PSP's new president and CEO. It's a tremendous privilege to lead one of Canada's largest pension investment managers. Je suis très contente de travailler avec le conseil d'administration et l'équipe exceptionnelle de PSP. On a personal level, while I've worked in many places around the world, I was born and raised in Canada, and I'm honored to support the pension plans of those who have served our country. It's a privilege to contribute to the financial security of these important Canadians. Let's turn to the highlights of PSP's performance in fiscal 2022. On June 9, 2022, we published our 2022 annual report, Investing for a Better Tomorrow. This report is available on our website, and I invite you to take a look at it. In our annual report, you will discover our annual financial results, highlights from our corporate strategy, PSP Forward, spotlights on notable investments, overview of our approach to responsible investing, our new climate strategy, and highlights around our people, including our approach to equity, inclusion, and diversity. First, I'll share an overview of our financial results, looking at both the total fund and asset classes. Overall, PSP delivered solid above benchmark performance for fiscal year 2022. At the level of the total fund, as you see from the blue bar on the far left, PSP posted a one-year return of 10.9% in FY 2022. We continued to generate strong income as the markets recovered, translating into a higher net AUM of $230.5 billion at the end of the fiscal year. This is up from $204.5 billion at the end of fiscal year 2021. In terms of our long-term performance, our five-year annualized return, shown by the bars in the middle of the slide, was 9% against the reference portfolio return of 7%. And our 10-year annualized return was 9.8% against the 10-year reference portfolio return of 8.4%. We are well positioned to continue to build an organization capable of managing a larger portfolio in the long term. I'll now do a deeper dive from an asset class perspective, starting with capital markets. With a net AUM of $99.9 billion, capital markets is our largest asset class and is composed of public market equities and fixed income. The growth was mainly driven by positive portfolio income and deployments in new strategies, offset by a reduction of public markets exposure due to the total fund rebalancing operations. Capital markets delivered a one-year rate of return of 3% and a five-year annualized return of 7.4%. With respect to public market equities, following another eventful year marked by the emergence of COVID-19 variants, inflation, supply chain challenges, and Russian Federation's invasion of Ukraine, global equity markets, excluding emerging markets, proved to be resilient in the face of heightened volatility. Turning to private equity, with net AUM of $35.4 billion, private equity achieved a one-year rate of return of 27.6% and a five-year annualized return of 17.6%. Portfolio income reached $8.6 billion. New co-investments were made primarily in the U.S. technology and healthcare sectors. Now, credit investments. With net AUM of $21.9 billion, credit investments generated a one-year rate of return of 7.5%. The five-year annualized return was 7.9%. Net change in AUM was $7.4 billion. This was mainly driven by record levels of activity by private equity sponsors, leading to significant opportunities for credit investments across the debt capital spectrum. A substantial contributor to absolute return was the gross interest income earned, as well as fee income from significant deployment this year. Turning to real estate, with net AUM of $31.1 billion, real estate generated a one-year rate of return of 24.8% and a five-year annualized return of 8.7%. Real estate focused on deploying into high conviction sectors, resulting in key acquisitions within the logistics, housing, life science, and studio sectors. Infrastructure has a net AUM of $23.5 billion and generated a one-year rate of return of 13.9% and a five-year annualized return of 10.4%. Portfolio income reached $2.7 billion for the current fiscal year. Infrastructure deployed $4.8 billion of capital this year in direct and co-investments and $1.3 billion through fund investments. New investments supported the energy transition across Europe and Oceania by acquiring equity participations in utilities and industrials, more specifically in the transportation sector. For natural resources, Natural Resources had a net AUM of $11.6 billion and generated a one-year rate of return of 15.9% and a five-year annualized return of 8.5%. Fiscal year 2022 was marked by continued strong deployment of $1.9 billion, mainly in Oceania and the U.S., both in agriculture and timber, and significant valuation gains of $1.3 billion. The positive results are reflective of the long-term investment horizon, strong operating performance, and accretive asset valuations of the timberland assets and agriculture investments. In fiscal 2022, we recorded strong performance despite the fact that the investment landscape was impacted by significant events, including the global pandemic, inflation, and the conflict in Ukraine. While we don't know what the future will hold, we are confident in our investment approach. It will help us navigate future market developments and achieve our objectives. This includes taking a long-term approach, building in inflation protection where possible, and a broad portfolio that is diversified. Let me now review some of our other important highlights from the last fiscal year. I'll start with our corporate strategy, PSP Forward. Fiscal year 2022 marked the first year of implementation of our corporate strategy. Our strategy guides how we deliver on our mandate and evolve our corporate competitive position in an increasingly dynamic investment landscape. Our vision under PSP Forward is to be an insightful global investor and valued partner that is selective across markets and focused on the long term. We've made significant progress across the three strategic pillars of PSP Forward. Number one, global fund first. Number two, insight driven. And number three, high performing team. In FY23, we're continuing to implement our strategy with a focus on our total fund performance, sustainable investing, and continuing our focus on high-performing teams. We'll now turn to two important corporate highlights, our green bond issuance and our climate strategy. In February 2022, under the PSP Green Bond Framework, we issued a $1 billion 10-year green bond to fund projects that demonstrate positive environmental and climate outcomes. Eligible projects range across eight categories that include, among others, renewable energy, energy efficiency, pollution prevention, green buildings, and clean transportation. Together, the framework and our debt program equip PSP with a new financing vehicle. This enables us to broaden our investor base and allows us to enter a growing market to offer debt products that address investors' demands for climate-focused products. Let's now turn to an issue on everyone's minds, climate change. At PSP, we recognize the whole economy transition required by climate change and the importance of our actions. We know that the financial sector has a role to play in the transition to global net zero. This includes investing in opportunities that support the transition and working with partners and our portfolio companies to reduce GHG emissions across our total fund. Importantly, we're doing this while ensuring we generate the long-term returns needed to achieve our mandate. On Earth Day 2022, we launched PSP's first climate strategy. The climate strategy roadmap is available on our website, and I invite you to read it. At the heart of our climate strategy is our commitment to use our capital and influence to support the transition to global net zero by 2050. So what does this mean, use our capital and influence? With regards to capital, how we invest and in what we invest will play a large role in our contribution to the whole economy transition required by climate change. This includes aiming to increase our investments in green and climate-enabling assets and reduce our investments in those companies that lack transition plans. With regards to influence, this speaks to the sway we have with our portfolio companies and with our co-investor partners and our stakeholders to encourage them to reduce operational carbon footprints, encourage them to adopt transparent reporting standards aligned with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, or the TCFD. This slide shows how we will achieve our strategy. Essentially, there are five focus areas. First, climate integration. We will continue to integrate climate risks and opportunities into investment decision-making and asset management practices. Second, climate investing and sustainable finance. We have an opportunity to invest in a way that can help reduce GHG exposure in our portfolio, and by extension, the real economy. We will do this by aiming to increase investments in green assets and transition assets, and we will aim to reduce our investment in carbon-intensive assets that don't have transition plans. Third, engagement and proxy voting. We will engage and advocate among our portfolio companies to encourage adoption of improved climate change practices and disclosures that are aligned with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. Fourth, our own reporting and disclosure. We will strive to improve both the robustness and coverage of PSP's reporting and continue to align our disclosure with the TCFD recommendations. And last, leadership and collaboration. We will participate in investor-led initiatives on climate change to help enhance the state of knowledge and practice in this important area. In terms of targets, we've established short-term climate targets to measure our progress in terms of both dollars and GHG reduction. When we successfully implemented our climate strategy, we expect to reduce our portfolio GHG emissions intensity by 20 to 25% by the end of 2026. In closing, we've accomplished a lot in the last fiscal year, with returns we're proud of. We have also significantly moved the yardstick in important areas of responsible investment, sustainable finance, and climate. Il y a plus d'informations dans le rapport annuel. J'espère que vous prendrez le...
There's more information in the annual report. I hope you will take some time to read the information. Je veux reconnaître également que les résultats de PSP au niveau financier et non financier sont dus en grande partie grâce à nos employés très talentueux, très engagés dans nos bureaux canadiens et à l'international. Je suis chanceuse de me joindre à une formation solide, forte, qui dispose d'une stratégie très forte.
I look forward to playing my part in shaping PSP's ongoing success. With that, let's open it up to Q&A.
Thank you very much, Deborah. So now to start our Q&A session. There are a couple of housekeeping rules that I'd like to review with you to ensure that we get as many questions answered as possible. First of all, please submit your questions through the chat function, and thank you for those of you who submitted questions in advance. On peut poser des questions aussi dans la langue officielle de votre choix. In order to keep the questions focused, we will be focusing on the question portion itself and not necessarily on the remarks that come before the questions. And also, questions of similar themes will be aggregated together to ensure we're not asking the same question many times. And lastly, for the privacy of those involved, we will not be disclosing the identity of the individuals or the organization from which the questions are coming. So we have a number of questions already to get us going, so we will start with the questions. The first question has to do with our climate pledge. And the question is, why did PSP not commit to a net zero pledge?
Maybe I'll start by opening remarks. As you know, my former organization did make that pledge. But I say, as CEO of PSP, that I think our strategy importantly focuses on some short-term targets that will put us in motion and commit to actions that will make a difference. So let me hand it over to Edward to talk more about that strategy.
Yeah, thank you, Deb. I think it's important to actually combine, as you said, the long-term pledge with the shorter-term target setting. When we worked on the climate change project, the climate change strategy, we thought about the pledge for a very, very long time. And some of the things that popped up were, for example, like, gosh, 2050 is a long way out. So yes, you can make a pledge and say like, we will be net zero in 30 years time. But how realistic is that if you do not have any short-term targets in place? So we decided ultimately to say like, well, it is more powerful and probably more genuine to say like, we certainly want to support the global movement towards a net zero world. But in order to make it effective, we need to implement short-term targets. And those short-term targets are driving us and the different asset classes to really contribute to this big and important theme.
Thank you. A second question, also on the climate theme, is with regards to the PSP's green asset taxonomy. So PSP has a classification system for green assets. Can you please elaborate on the definitions for transition assets, carbon-intensive assets, and green assets, and make it a little bit easier to understand what is involved in these sorts of assets?
You want to take this? Yeah. Sure. The green taxonomy was the outcome, actually, of our climate change strategy work that we did before. And we felt that the green taxonomy cannot just be, let's say, a ranking in terms of, you know, how much emission will lead to a dark green asset and how much emission will actually lead to basically a very poorly company in terms of emission. We really felt that that there had to be an intention at the side of the companies as well in order to become more greener. And that's via the what we call the transition plans. So our green taxonomy is a matrix, basically, of on the one hand emission levels, and on the other hand the existence of transition plans. It's pretty detailed because it could well be that there is let's say a company with high emission levels, but a very clear transition plan, which we will consider actually a pretty green company. The intention is very important. At the same time, Deborah already said, like, if we have a company with emission levels, but absolutely no transition plan and doesn't take climate change seriously, we will divest from those companies. Transition assets are basically those assets that will help basically this whole journey towards a net zero world. And that could be, for example, carbon capturing activities. So it is to be honest, maybe a bit of a complex matrix. It will be in the responsible investment report. But the good thing is that by introducing this taxonomy, we actually attracted a lot of attention by our peers, not just in Canada, but worldwide, that they find this taxonomy a very interesting taxonomy.
Yeah, I just add, I think that it's really important that we've included in our targets not just green investments, but also transition investments, because it recognizes that there is a transition that needs to occur, and that we can use our capital and our influence to support the whole economy transition that is underway.
Thank you. We now have two related questions associated with real estate. The first of those questions is, PSP, what is your position on multifamily residences in the GTA or the Greater Toronto Area?
Pat?
Thank you. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Valerie. So the real estate, the multifamily and the residential real estate sector is a very important sector of the Canadian economy. It's very large. As a pension investment manager, it's an integral part and component of a diversified portfolio and a balanced approach of investing in real estate. So as a pension investment manager, we partner with reputable operators across the industry in order for us to be exposed to the real estate itself, the hard assets, while the management of the buildings is provided by those operators with whom we have a very high degree of confidence that they're doing the best possible work in the industry. So that has been our approach across Canada in the real estate residential sector, including in the GTA. We also, more importantly, ensure that we comply with all laws and regulations in each of the provinces in which we invest. In Ontario, there's a number of regulators that are looking at the industry, and we ensure we comply with all of those regulations and laws.
Thank you. There is a related question to that as well, part two, and that is with regards to PSP supporting above guideline rent increases also in the Greater Toronto Area, and whether we have a comment on that.
Yes. Okay. Above guidance increases are highly regulated. Again, in the Toronto region and in Ontario in general, we invest in art assets. We partner with operators, the best in class operators in the industry. So what we do each time there's an AGI application that's in front of the OLTB, in this case, the Ontario Landlord and Tenant Board, we ensure with our operator that we review very carefully each of the elements that are part of the AGI application. And we ensure essentially that three items are being respected in all cases. The first one being that the AGI calculation itself pertains to capital improvements that are being made and related to eligible expenses under the law in the GTA, the Residential Tenancy Act applies. And eligible expenses, example, will be major structural maintenances to buildings, energy conservation, or building security, for instance. Secondly, when we do with our operators aesthetics improvements to buildings or improvement to resident experiences, we ensure that those expenses are not part of the AGI calculation and therefore not circulating and in the rent increase that corresponds. Lastly, and very importantly, we ensure that when AGIs are in place, that there is a financial assistance program that's in place as well, that's intended to allow residents that are suffering financial hardship that they can apply for the program and for potentially a rent relief as well. And in most cases, in all cases actually, in the Toronto region, pertaining to the question, when we got a request for a financial assistance, we have found ways of providing assistance under the program, either in the form of direct financial assistance or rent relief program.
Thank you. Next question is with regards to private equity investments. The question is with regards to given the high fees associated with private equity investments, could PSP speak a little bit about whether we intend to fully divest from private equity or bring such investments in-house?
Why don't you let Edward comment on that?
Let me be very clear. When we think about portfolio construction and different asset classes, I think there's a very clear role to play for private equity in our fund. And the role they play is to provide additional returns, or actually very high returns, compared to any other asset class that we have in the fund. Historically, this has always been the case, and as you saw the numbers, they did an excellent job in providing the additional return that helps us actually to deliver on our mandate. So going forward, we do have a challenging environment, that's certainly true. And one of the questions is like, will private equity be able to continue to perform the way it did in the past,
And maybe that the returns become under pressure a little bit, but I think compared to other asset classes, there is still a very important role to play for private equity. Will we actually bring it in-house? That is a very strategic question, to be honest. We like to team up with strategic partners. In general, that's the case for PSP. So we do have private equity partners we team up with. I don't think we will ever go away from that model and do everything totally internally. I think we will continue, but clearly with a changing market dynamic, we will review the strategy with regards to private equity and how to position ourselves the best way possible.
Maybe I'd just add that I think with private equity and with the partnership of highly sophisticated private equity partners, there is the opportunity through that active ownership to add value to investments. And that added value is even more meaningful to the total return in a lower return environment. So despite the challenging market conditions that we may be facing going forward, I think it's a important part of a well-diversified portfolio.
The next question takes us back to climate. And the question is whether PSP could please comment on the purchase of oil and gas facilities and how that aligns with the climate strategy.
Yeah, sure. You want me to take it?
Yeah.
Good. I think we made it very clear that our climate strategy is not a well thought through strategy. One of the things we do not believe in is divestments in high emission companies, including fossil fuels. I think the best way going forward and to be genuine in terms of reaching a net zero world is actually help those companies with high emissions and see if we can change their business model that they become a greener company. So we don't have any, let's say, a restricted list in place where we say like, well, just because they are high emitter, we're not going to invest in them anymore. No, we will actually continue to invest in any company as long as there is a true willingness by the company to become a greener organization. And that relates back to what I mentioned before, the transition plans. It's only when we see that there is no true willingness by the companies to really change that we will divest. And by the way, that's also based on a financial argument, because we truly believe that those companies will be punished in the market in terms of their pricing, etc. And by the way, also their customers. So there is a true business case as well to continue to invest in those companies.
I agree. I think as an active investor, rather than taking blanket exclusionary policies, we have the opportunity to bottom up, make individual investment decisions that allow us to maximize returns. And that includes using our capital into opportunities to support the transition and then be able to use our influence to add value and support the transition. So I think that it's the right policy for our organization and the right policy to deliver long-term returns in a environment where the whole economy is transitioning.
A follow-up question to that is if we could please give an example of how we are working with companies to support them to get onto a science-based decarbonization plan.
Pat, you want to take that?
Sure. We're working with each portfolio company to ensure they have a plan in place, and then take that plan and see what's feasible in terms of advancing the plan forward. So the primary responsibility sits with the portfolio company, the management team, and the board of that company to establish a credible plan, to follow up on execution of the plan. But as an investor, we use our influence through the board representation on those companies to establish further criterias and advance the agenda. One example is TriSummit Utilities here in Canada, a company that's involved in gas distribution, where we have, together with the company, established a net zero target. We're using that company to do further acquisitions, the concept of platform, to add to our exposure. And as we integrate subsidiaries of that portfolio company into the mix, we ensure that those subsidiaries have a plan that's in line with the mothership, and that's where it's possible to advance the agenda towards net zero, in that case, for TriSummit.
Great example. Thank you.
We have a slightly technical question here. And the question is, if we can please explain the difference between emissions intensity that we are using for the climate commitment and why we're using that as opposed to measuring actual emissions.
Measuring the carbon footprint in absolute numbers is less meaningful to us. It's the intensity. So it's related to another variable. So if you just measure anything, it doesn't have to be climate, it can be anything. If you measure anything in absolute numbers, you get a ranking of who's a polluter, who's not a polluter, or whatever you look into. That ranking isn't necessarily a valid ranking at all. So you need to contrast it to another variable to see how pollutive a company really is, and that's why we use the intensity.
In very simple terms, with a growing portfolio, you might have an increase in the total carbon number, whereas the intensity gives you a measure of how much carbon on a sort of apples-to-apples basis, how carbon-intense our portfolio is relative to others.
We don't have any further questions. So for those of you who are listening, if there's anything additional you would like to ask, please do type that into the chat. We have a few more minutes. We'll just give them a few more minutes. Staying with the climate theme, one other question. Can PSP elaborate on its climate change targets?
For sure. The climate change targets, and I assume it's the short-term targets that we're talking about here, it's related to basically all the categories that we distinguish. So first of all, we like to see more green assets in the portfolio than we currently have. We like to increase the transition assets as well, because we find that is actually maybe the most important type of investment in terms of the transition. And there's, but that goes in a different direction, there's the divestment from those emitters who are not willing to come up with a transition plan. So in short, we've got basically like five or six different shorter term targets. They're not set in stone. I would like to emphasize this. This is something that we came up in our climate change strategy group as a very first target setting. What we do over time, and we started to do this, is actually gather as much market intelligence around climate change as we can to basically assess and also review those targets as we go. So what I foresee is that on a yearly basis, we will actually look into the targets and see what's actually available or what is opportune for us. And we very likely are to adjust those targets. And the more ambitious we can become, the better it is. But it's very clear that the market is evolving. The science around it is actually developing. There are a lot of unknowns. So the only way to deal with it very effectively is if we combine that market intelligence, whether that comes from our partners, our own internal management or academia, to combine it all together and make those shorter term targets as real and effective as possible.
I agree, and I think that despite the fact that we've been open about the fact that things will continue to evolve, the fact that we were quite specific in our climate strategy and setting these short-term targets demonstrates our commitment to the action. So specifically, we've set the green asset target at 70 billion by 2026 from a baseline of 40.3 billion in 2021. The transition assets at 7.5 billion by 2026, and the reduction in carbon intensive assets that lack transition plans by 50% by 2026. So they're very specific targets that demonstrate our commitment to acting.
Maybe, Edward, I'll add from an investment lens the importance that you highlighted of the evergreen nature of the commitments. And there, the six commitments are going to evolve over time. And as we publish our responsible investment report every year, you'll find more details on how our thinking evolves on a year-to-year basis. For our portfolio companies, it's important that we can adapt, and I think we have the right framework to adapt and meet our evolving commitments over time.
Thank you. The question just came in on private equity. With regards to, there's media report in the financial press speaking about PSP planning to divest $2 billion in private equity. The question is, could we speak to whether private equity balancing, how we are balancing these sorts of decisions in order to maximize returns for our mandate?
Maybe I'll start and hand it over to you, which is, as a mature fund, we are always taking a total view of our portfolio, and things like the opportunity to potentially sell some LP interests in our out of our private equity portfolio is part of a regular portfolio management activity that we and other funds participate in.
Yeah, and to add to that, our value proposition is really based on a very long-term strategic mix of assets. And what we've seen this year is an event that we haven't seen really before, where the public markets are taking a nosedive, but the private assets are actually remaining relatively stable. So if we look at the current portfolio in light of that longer-term asset mix, we see there is an over allocation to, as a result, an over allocation to the private assets. Now, this doesn't have to be alarming at all because we do have that long-term investment horizon, and we do not want any of the private assets to actually come to a fire sale of their assets. So we actually look into it very carefully. How can we actually bring the allocation back to where we want it to be longer term? And we are exploring different options to do so. Part of the process is what we call our dynamic asset allocation, which actually allows shorter term deviations from the long term asset mix that we're aiming for. So these articles probably relate to that process that we started internally to see what is possible with private assets, and in this case, private equity specifically.
And ultimately, we'll use the benefit of the deep expertise that we have in private equity to make value maximizing decisions, both when we buy and if we decide to sell.
Okay. With that, I am not seeing any further questions. Perhaps we'll just pause for a minute and see if anything else comes in. Just for those asking questions, I do see all of your questions, and I do see that there are a number of questions with a similar theme. And just to remind everyone, we're clustering the theme so that we're being efficient with our time. So not seeing any further questions and seeing there's a few minutes left in our session, perhaps I can turn it back to the chair to start the closing.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to my colleagues at the table. Thanks for joining us today. PSP Investments will post the video of this meeting to the website. Please expect to see it by the end of the week. Thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next year at roughly the same time. So thank you very much.